It's more like a dropping of the fear that we're not good enough, a dropping of the illusion that there's something fundamentally wrong with us. It's much more of a remembering of our goodness than a becoming good. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Conversations from the Heart. You are in the right place if you are longing to use words in authentic, kind, and direct ways to connect more deeply and to make a meaningful and positive impact on the world at home and at work. Do you want to have a new kind of conversation with both yourself and others? Let's dive in. I am delighted to be here with you. And then a couple of things I want to just mention. I'm running a course for Nonviolent Communication Academy, NVC Academy, called Navigating Power Dynamics with Nonviolent Communication. It starts April 15th. If any of you are interested in how to embody shared power with other people, especially as you're working in a non-sharing power system, in situations where there is a power hierarchy, power over, power under, what does it take for us to remain in an empowered shared power frame? What are the interpersonal tools that we need? How do we use empathy as a superpower in those situations? And so it's going to be a little bit of a deep dive into what is power, what activates rebelling and submit dynamics, what is the anatomy of a power struggle, how do you step out of a power struggle. It is going to be very interpersonally focused. When you are in a particular situation and you are perceiving inequitable power, how do you calibrate to that kind of a relational context? What are the questions you need to be asking yourself? How do you prepare for it? And then what, depending upon what power position you're in, if you have more power or you have less power, what things do you need to be additionally aware of as you move into those kinds of interpersonal frames, and how do you navigate them with more skill, where you are really grounded in your own empowerment, your own choicefulness, your care, your empathy, and aware of what blind spots you might have. If you can't make the courses live, you do get access to all the replays and all the materials. So you don't have to show up for the sessions live in order to enjoy the course. So I just wanted to mention that in case any of you were interested. I was just having so much fun developing it this weekend. And there are three lovely questions in the room. So I'm going to get to Nate and Prerana and Mika. So we're going to dive in with Nate first and just work our way through questions today. So hi, Nate. How are you doing?
I am very well.
Good. So you need to change AA sponsors, and you want to have that conversation without judging her. And you need someone with more emotional intelligence. That's what I've got so far. Tell me more.
Yeah. So my fear, what comes up when I think about having the conversation, is telling her all the things that I need that she doesn't. And that feels really horrible.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And I don't know how to take that judgment out. Like, I don't want to be like, hey, I need a new sponsor.
So you want to, if I'm understanding it right, you want to ask, you want to let her know, you want to close the work you're doing with her, and you want to find someone else, and you want to be able to give her enough information that there's a closed loop, that she's not wondering why, without so much information that it feels painful. Am I getting that right? What would you change about that?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. So the way that I might give somebody enough information without going into all of the details, unless they ask, like if they ask a lot of follow-up questions, it might get more complicated, but is to make it really general, right? How long have you worked with this person?
6 months.
Okay. You know what? I would start by, the last 6 months have been really useful to me in the following ways. Here's some of the things that I've really gotten from the work that we've done together. I think I heard you say a little earlier on that you've been sober for those 6 months. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Great. So I would start with that. And I would start with a gratitude and a celebration of what has worked. And then I might move into a little bit of a, I'm noticing a longing coming up in me for, and I wonder what that might be. If you were saying it to me, judgment and all, what is the longing that you have?
I have a longing for someone who can go where I need to go emotionally, right? Like we had a conversation a couple weeks ago. That was like one of the many red flags that I'm like, okay, this is, I need to move on. Was I mentioned something about my inner child.
Yeah.
And she was like, oh, I don't have one of those. And I was like, I might suggest that everyone would have an inner child. And she goes, well, mine's dead and gone.
Like,
what did you do to little Lisa? What, right? Like,
yeah, got it.
And so I need someone who can go there with me and has those, because she's never done anything other than AA.
Okay.
And could really benefit from so many things.
So if we were just to use that example, it might sound a little bit like, you know, here are the, start with all the celebrations, the things that are good, the things you're grateful for. And then I would switch to, remember that conversation we had where you told me your inner child was dead and gone and we kind of laughed about it in that moment? You know, I'd sort of remind her of that moment. And I'd say, I'm really grateful that you shared that with me. And I get it. We have a different relationship, but it stuck with me and I've been thinking about it. And I'm realizing that I'm actually looking for someone right now who has a lot of skill and experience and interest in doing that kind of parts work or inner child work as part of the process that I'm in. And it was a clarifying moment. I feel like this is a good place for us to start drawing our relationship to a close and for me to start moving on to somebody who is more interested in doing that kind of work. How does that feel as a potential way of approaching it?
I
What works?
really
Yeah.
like what most landed on me was when you said, I have a longing
Yeah.
for this thing. Like it felt very much like I'm owning this part of me that wants to take things further,
Yeah.
as opposed to her lacking
Yeah.
something, right? Like I have a longing for this.
Yeah.
It was
And
like,
it's not necessarily a critique of things that are wrong with her. It's more an acknowledgement of a divergence of interests
yes,
and expertise. And I think there's a way that you can have that conversation that is actually quite honoring of the other person. Like, I see you and I know you and I get you and I like you. And here's what you've done well. And now I'm also going to go and look for it's like a different kind of specialist. You know, I'm not going to see a cardiologist for my gut problems. And that's not a, I'm sorry, but you're a heart surgeon and you don't focus on my microbiome and you don't focus on my nutrition. And here are all the things you don't do. And so I'm going to go find someone else. You can frame it up more neutrally than that if you want to. How's that landing?
I felt the shift. Yep. The little exhale in connection.
Do you want to try it out or do you feel complete? Do you want to play a little bit with the language or do you feel like that's enough?
I want to say that's enough because I'm.
Oh, okay. And do we want to have that fear be like a wisdom and the fear is something we should honor and know that that's a limit? Or is that a fear that is inviting courage and you want a little encouragement to push through the fear and do it anyway? Which one feels more like where you're at?
I would like encouragement to do it.
Okay, great. Great, great, great. So isn't that nice how we know that when we check in that way? Yeah, because sometimes we're not sure whether the fear should be followed or not. Great. Well, here's the encouragement I can offer you. What if you try a lot of really bad ways of saying it? All of the things that you're afraid might slip out, and I'll field it with empathy. I'll field it in the best possible way as the person receiving it just fine so that you can detox any of the things that are still living in you that might want to slip out. And let's see where that takes us.
So hold back everything that I've been holding in for the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, just put it out there. Just speak to me as if I'm your sponsor and do it really unskillfully first. And I'll actually play the role of not taking anything personally.
Sponsor, dear sponsor.
Yeah.
I get so stressed out.
Mm-hmm.
Is how irritable you are in meetings and in life. Most annoyed, short circuit, no grace, no compassion in the moment. And it stresses me out so much that I feel like I am trying to nurture you from afar so that you can handle your shit while I'm trying to also just be present.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks for letting me know that. So it's really stressful for you as you listen to my clarity and my discernment about what everybody should and shouldn't do. It feels to you like you are like taking on a lot of the emotional load and trying to care for yourself and others and me. And it's actually really activating. Am I hearing that right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's helpful
I
to
want to
know.
know where your program comes into play in real life, other than just after.
Wait, say that again. Where my program comes
Yeah, so
into
like
play.
the program aspect is like, you know, like something that we talk about is being restless, irritable, and discontent.
Say
Right.
that again.
Is being restless, irritable, and discontent.
Got it.
Right?
Yes.
And that is something that, again, so we work for something else, right?
I see.
Instead, it's like she embodies
I
restless,
see.
irritable, and discontent.
Okay. So it sounds like when I am restless, irritable, and discontent, are those the right words? Did I get that right? Close enough. When I am in that space myself, it sounds like that is putting a lot of emotional load on you at a time when you're really needing a lot of internal resources to focus on yourself.
This feels really mean. This is, feels like a horrible conversation to have.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend having it with a real person.
I thought, as I'm saying it, I'm like, wow, Nate, these are really harsh
Yeah.
judgments that you've been holding inside of you.
Yeah, there's also some clarity. I mean, I just want to add, like, I think you're seeing accurately that this particular relational frame doesn't have the emotional resources in it yet that you could really benefit from. And there's a wisdom coming up for you around it. And the way that we often get to know our wisdom is first through a lot of very harsh, mean judgments of one another. And my recommendation is always give that voice, the judgmental, harsh, mean voice, some airtime, but not to the person that's stimulating them. So yeah, go ahead and own the part of you that can be mean and harsh and rejecting, and discharge some of that energy. Like, we don't want to be working against ourselves, suppressing ourselves, but we want to contain it and actually direct it in ways that are life-affirming and kind to everybody. And it would be a form of nonviolence to not allow yourself to know what you really think and who you really are and how you're really feeling. But knowing what I think and who I am and how I'm really feeling and all of the judgmental, cutting, biting things that I might say doesn't give me license to just go and impose it on the world, right? But for me to work with myself in a self-responsible, aware, and whole way, I need to have a big enough container in me to be able to work with, hear, see, take responsibility for all of the different things coming up in me. And so that's what I'm hoping we're doing a little bit of here is like, hey, Nate, bring it on. Your mean, crabby, harsh, judgmental self is super welcome here. Say it to me. Let's see if we can do something constructive with it. And then once all of that emotional charge neutralizes a little bit, like it doesn't carry so much underground energy, when you show up with the other person, you will have more emotional resources available to you in that moment. Whereas if we don't collectively, if we don't give those voices, if we aren't journaling, if we're not processing it, if we're not putting it on the table, if we're not getting aware of it, one of the things we might be doing is just disowning it and sending it into the shadows. And when we do that, it gets a lot of underground momentum. And that's where you'll have these moments where you're saying it very nicely in all the nice words, but the energy is not aligned and the other person is just hearing criticism anyway. That was a lot. I just said a lot there. What's coming up in you hearing all of that?
Lovely. I was actually, it was interesting, like the amount of heat that came up in me as I was talking.
Yeah.
And then I just felt that all like wash out as I was listening to you.
Yeah.
Down, and I, like you're so right about how charged, right? Like it's this thing has been living in my head for weeks now, and now it has just become this huge barrier, and that, just letting that energy out of my mouth, because I've constantly been like, well, I can't say that to anybody, I can't say that, to actually be able to say that.
So let's just refine that. I don't want to say that to this person.
No, but to
because
say
that would be harmful. But I do want to say it.
Like,
right,
you always talk about empathy buddies, and that's just such a scary thing for me to find someone, and so I don't do it often, and this is just such a perfect representation of what empathy buddies, having that person that you can just jackal away to you.
Yes,
like I haven't actually really experienced that before in my body, and now I'm like, oh, that's why you tell us to do that. That's
yes.
This feeling that I have right now.
It reminds me of, if you've ever owned a dog, that a high energy dog. Have you ever owned a high energy dog, Nate, or not?
No, this is a really neat cat.
Okay. We used to have a corgi and then we had a German shepherd, and these are high energy dogs, right? And one of the things that I learned is that if you don't take that dog out for a daily exercise, if you don't run that dog, you're going to get a lot of destruction in your house. And that happens psychologically to us as well. If you don't let that angry, judgmental voice go for a run and get expressed and let that energy move through you, it's going to do a lot of damage on the inside. And then what it's going to do is become passive aggressive on the outside, at least if you're in the Midwest mostly, I think. I think in other parts of the world, it just becomes aggressive aggressive. But I think in the places where we just suppress it and then it leaks out sideways, right? It's so much healthier to just be like, oh, I know what this is. I know what's coming up here. Let me find a safe dog park where I can go and take this part of me for a run, because there is energy in here. There's mattering in here. There's a part of me that wants to be seen and known. Maybe it's a younger part. Maybe it's an unskillful part. That's okay. But all parts are welcome, remember? So all parts want to be seen and heard and expressed. And I love when you mentioned the heat that you felt coming up in you. That is one of the many signs that you are discharging emotion from your body. Heat, cold, trembling, shaking, laughing, tears. There are so many different things: farting, yawning, peeing, not to get completely gross, but all of these can be linked to emotional discharge from your system. And that is good emotional hygiene, to continue processing emotions, not keeping them stuck inside of our bodies. And that means contacting them, expressing them, connecting with them, and also being choiceful and skillful about who and when and where, so that we're not just doing the unskillful, unconscious thing of venting and dumping all of the stuff we don't want to hold on everybody else. We just get clever about it and sophisticated about it. I just want to put a plug in for allowing all the voices that want to arise in you to come out and be seen and heard, and having that be a very different thing than license to go and say whatever you want to whomever you want. Those are two very different things. But it is an act of self-honoring to allow yourself to know what you really think and how you really feel. And sometimes it's, think of it as all my rough drafts. I've got to get all my rough drafts down first or out first, and then I can have a look at what's there. And now I can begin a sorting and discernment process about what I want to buy into, what I don't want to buy into, what I want to let go, what I want to pick up. But knowing it's there is the first step. So Nate, you're muted. Anything else?
Yeah, I think one thing that I'm also noticing is just how much judgment I had about myself, about my judgment about her. Like, I'm finding this, like, you have this way of giving permission to feel what you're feeling and feeling okay about it, where, like, I've hated this voice in my head for the last couple of weeks, and I'm like, ah. And it feels like that was able to express itself. And like, I wish that I could explain the lightness in my body compared to before.
I love that. This idea of having permission to be where we are, express what's real for us. It sounds like it feels lightening, enlightening in a way to you. Yeah, more of that. That's how we stay. That's part of the practice of staying in the present moment. It's very difficult to stay in the present moment and to actually be present when we're carrying a lot of, what's the word I'm looking for? Like buildup of unprocessed stuff from the past that we don't give ourselves permission to connect to express, to work with, to update. So a lot of this is part of that. As you do more of that, it creates room on the inside. And once you have more room on the inside, you are able to be more fully present to yourself and other people. And if we have all of this stuff that we're not allowed to feel, not allowed to think, not allowed to express, not allowed to have be a part of our experience, so much of our emotional energy gets locked up in all the things I'm not allowed to be, say, or do. Yeah. Thank you for bringing that in. How are you right now?
I feel complete.
Okay, great. What a great question. I love your question. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, any clarifying questions on this piece? Otherwise, I'm going to move to Prerana next. We good? All right. Where is Prerana? Are you here?
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am good. Thank you. So your question is how to not rush our inner work, and how to be more patient with ourselves, and also how to keep our inner work natural and not pressured. Tell me a little bit more. What are you noticing?
So in the last chat we had, we spoke about being confident, but also being that without being fake and being true to ourselves. So I've been trying it out, And I realized that I've become this person who's constantly calculating myself. Like, am I doing it right? Am I speaking well? And am I looking stupid and all of that? And the voices in my head are like so constant that I'm not able to be present in the moment. And it's like either I'm too self-conscious of what I'm saying, how I'm saying, or if I tell myself to let go of the voices, then I get anxious thinking I'll say something wrong or I'll come off as arrogant. So I want to be in the moment, but also be myself and not be stupid, I guess.
Okay, I've heard things you don't want to be include arrogant, stupid. What else?
So if I'm alone at home, if I'm reading something or just looking in the mirror, I start talking to myself and I see that I speak well and I'm feeling confident. But the moment I go outside, it's like my shoulders are like, you know, all this pressure and the weight, all these thoughts. And I want to let go of my true self, able to be that also because of these thoughts and the pressure.
Yeah, it seems like there's a lot of pressure of things you're not allowed to be. These would be bad to be. And I think one step, this won't be the whole thing, but one step is giving yourself permission to be stupid and arrogant and anxious and insecure and overly, whatever it is, whatever the things are that you currently feel like you're not allowed to be. It would be dangerous to be those things. It would be bad to be those things. I would do some work around giving myself permission. It's okay if I'm arrogant. It's okay if I'm anxious. It's okay if I say something stupid and it's not aligned. I'm allowed to show up badly. And I'm going to tell you, this comes from deep personal experience because there are days where I do not want to come onto this call because I feel so much anxiety about it's going to be public and it's going to be out there and I don't feel up for it today. And I am not in the mood. And what if I say dumb things? And what if I give bad advice? And this is what I do is I go, okay, fine. Then what you're going to do is you're going to model for the whole world how you can be, you know, misaligned, unattuned, imperfect, not know what on earth you're talking about. And you're going to step up anyway. And then you're just going to model for everybody how to be imperfect and then get it all wrong and then be compassionate and okay about that. Like there are ways that I literally need to coach myself into it. Otherwise, my own anxiety would absolutely disable me. It would paralyze me. I would never come on these calls. So there's something about being allowed to do it badly that is very liberating. You know, if I felt like I always had to knock it out of the park or I always had to be useful, I don't think I would ever step into my day. But I give myself permission to, like, the thing that I found most useful is I don't have to be a great therapist. I just need to be a good enough therapist. I don't have to be a great person on a podcast. I just have to be good enough that some people get something out of it. So I get my standards in a place that feel more doable to me and kinder to me. So that's one piece. And that can be a lot of work because I think many of you know, and if you don't, I mean, I grew up in a diplomatic family. My father was a diplomat and we traveled a lot and we had a lot of diplomatic functions and cocktail parties and dinner parties. And this idea of needing to perform in a particular way, needing to present the image of a particular thing, having good manners, learning how to be a good host, learning how to be quiet, good children, learning how to be quiet, good girls. Like there was a lot of training in my childhood about being very image conscious and not making anybody else look bad and not showing up. Listen, authenticity was definitely not the value, okay? And so the value was performance and showing up in a way that was palatable to whomever was coming over. And so I just want to say I have a lot of empathy for that because it can create a tremendous amount of anxiety and a strong inner critic that is designed, it was instilled to keep you inhibited. Now the backside, I don't know if the backside is maybe the right word, but the flip side, maybe the word I'm looking for is flip side. Apparently I'm having a hard time coming up with accurate words today, which is going to be playful and fun. The downside, maybe I'm now still playing with words, is that that kind of conditioning can also instill in us a pretty healthy dose of shame. And when we are carrying that kind of shame, because what we learn then is that your authentic real way of being is dangerous And if you do any of the things that come naturally to you when you're eight and you have an itch and you want to scratch something, but that's not ladylike and you're not allowed to follow that impulse, you learn that your natural impulses, if you act on them, are going to cause you shame. And so then what happens is that inner voice becomes a very strong inhibiting factor to stop you. And what it's trying to do is protect you from feeling shame in a social situation. And so some of the work there, not only in the permission giving to reclaim all of these ways of being, but then there's also a little bit of like learning how to detox the shame from our systems and to develop more self-compassion and to sort of switch our worldview from, I'm not an object to be used. I'm not a peacock with a bunch of feathers. I'm a living, breathing, real, whole human with the full range of feelings and ways of being. And I want off the pedestal. I want off the pedestal that causes all this shame. I just want to be real with other people. So I want to come back to you, Priran, and find out what's fitting, what isn't fitting, what's coming up for you next hearing that. What's helpful and what isn't?
Yeah, so it's mostly that when you're working on all these things and basically are working on yourself,
mm-hmm.
when does it end? When do you start becoming those things and when do those voices stop? That you have to stop working on yourself. I've become this. It's time to let go of all these lessons. Like, when do you reach that point?
I would start with the recognition that you already are everything you're trying to be. You already are everything. There's nothing to become that you aren't already. And it's a process of dropping and letting go of the conditioning that you're not okay. It's a process of identifying the fears that were instilled in you and challenging every one of those fears. Would it really be that terrible if I was a little arrogant sometimes? No. Would it be really terrible if I said a stupid thing? No. Are these things that I really need to be afraid of? No. Now, you may in your own lives discover, yes, but this would be terrible. And then we work with those. And I'd find a therapist to help, right? I'd find a healer or a coach or somebody that can help untangle the places where you're like, oh no, that would be terrible and my life would end. And like, there we need a little bit of deeper work often. But a piece of it is remembering you're already whole, remembering you're already good. And it's much more of a remembering of our goodness than a becoming good. It's more like a dropping of the fear that we're not good enough, a dropping of the illusion that there's something fundamentally wrong with us. Now, we are a little bit unaware. I will say that. I think we come into adulthood or we come into this world with a lot of unconscious material. We're not really aware of it. We don't really get it. There's a waking up process. But what I want to suggest is a theory. I won't even put this as a truth yet. It lives in me as a truth, but I'll put it out there for you as a theory. That as you wake up, as you become more aware, as you begin to see through the illusions, everything that remains in you is good and loving and pro-social and kind and truthful. And it's really about bringing those parts more and more forward and examining all of the fears that were instilled by cultures of domination that benefit from a fearful and obedient populace. So now I'm going a little down a rabbit hole. We'll come back to real life. How's that landing, Prerana? What's the next question that comes up for you on that piece?
I agree with everything you say.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to try that.
Mm-hmm.
Just that whenever I go on to try something, I become very self-conscious and it's like I'm not able to be in the moment and every moment is calculated. Like mm-hmm. now I'm supposed to do this, now I'm supposed to do that. So I'm not free of all these thoughts and I wish I could stop them and for a moment at least not be afraid to say anything or do anything.
Beautiful. So here's one practice for that moment. Every time you find yourself in your mind, have an attention practice where you go from your mind to your sensations. Simply have a practice of, and what are the sensations in my body right now? And then just keep redirecting your attention from the thinking that is going on above your neck and bring your attention back down to your body. Is it tingly? Is it aching? Is there a pit in my stomach? Is it butterflies? Is it activating? Is it dull? Is it heavy? Is it cold? Is it hot? Is it tingly? And just have that practice of putting your attention on what's happening in my body, what's in my sensations, and then follow them. That will be one way to break the rumination loop, is to give your mind something else to focus on. And the thing that's going to be most grounding about the present moment is the literal sensations that are happening in your physical system. That's going to be a grounding switch. What do you think about that as a practice? Have you tried that before?
I've tried breathing. I have not tried this.
That can help. Yes, yes, yes. Yep. Breathing can help you. Noticing the breath can help. I personally, I don't know why. I find that actually tuning into sensations in my whole body is a little bit more interesting to me, to my mind, perhaps. And the thing that I often notice when I do that is, here's the weird thing. I'll just inoculate you against this for those of you who try it, or maybe a lot of you have had this happen as well. The moment that I put my attention on those sensations or those feelings, they tend to go away. And then I'm like, wait, what just happened? It's like when I notice I'm about to start crying, and then I'm like, oh, I'm about to start crying. And then suddenly all the crying goes away. Like the whole impulse to cry just disappears, like a cat into the woods. Like it goes. And then the trick for me there has been to stay with, okay, so what's next? And to just stay with the sensation and find out, oh, that went away. What's coming up instead? Is it a stillness? Is it a freeze reaction? Is it a shutdown? Am I going cold? Am I going solid? Am I going, you're like, it's staying in that place of curiosity, because remember your body is a living, breathing life, alive creature. It's a mammal. And there are sensations going on in it all the time, and it is changing all the time. It's always responding to what your mind is doing or not doing. And at least my body system does this thing where when I begin giving it direct attention, it kind of goes, it puts on an invisibility cloak. It's almost like it goes into a little freeze reaction. It's like, oh, don't look at me. And then it kind of goes away. And then I have to sit with it a little bit and make it safe. Like, no, no, I'm not coming to judge you. I'm not coming to judge you. I know I used to do that. I'm just coming to know you. What else is going on in there? And that can sometimes help it melt and come back online again. So how's that landing, Prerana?
Makes sense.
So with your question, not rushing the inner work and being patient, I think it's about really just giving yourself time to tune into the sensations in the moment, the breathing, the body, get your attention off your thinking space and into your feeling space and your need space a little bit more. And then keeping it natural and not pressured is reminding yourself, I have all the time in the world. I am an eternal being. There is no rush. There is no time. I have everything I need in this moment. I'm here for eternity. But use it as a thought experiment, even if you don't literally believe that. Try on the idea of that and see what that does to the experience of being not pressured. How's that landing?
Yeah, that's another thing that scares me, because I feel like I'm trying to be something, at least for myself, so I can finally say, oh, I've overcome this thing that I was dealing with. And it's always, wait, what if I die tomorrow? Then I'll die not being this thing.
So it's sort of the sense that that thinking in your mind creates for you, that's where the pressure and the urgency comes from, because it's saying you could be dead tomorrow. You have to embody enlightenment in this moment or else you're doomed. Yeah. And that's going to kick up a lot of fear in your body system. So you may want to, I'm going to leave all spiritual beliefs to each of you, whatever it is you want to believe, and do some examining there. I will tell you that for myself, I find it useful to remind myself, and you may not believe this, so find something that fits within your belief system if this doesn't work for you. But I tell myself all the time, honey, you are an eternal being. If you don't get it in this lifetime, if you need five more lifetimes to get it, you're going to get it in five lifetimes. There is no rush whatsoever. Enjoy the journey. You have eternity. You can take as long as you want. You can have it tomorrow if you want it tomorrow. This is going to be your choice. So, I mean, I don't know if that's true or not, but I will tell you, it helps me get into the kind of mindset that I feel like I need for what it is that I'm trying to do. And you guys go figure out, maybe in your spiritual beliefs, what feels resourcing to you there. How are you doing there, Prerana? Anything else? Are we follow-up questions?
No.
It's good enough for now. You have some ideas. I will be curious to know, if you want to loop back at some point, which things worked, which things didn't, where you've made progress and where you're still staying stuck, and we can talk again.
Start again, and we'll see.
Wonderful, wonderful. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. It's such a great question. The other piece on this, when we're like, when I hear things about, I want a lot of self-acceptance, but I also want a lot of self-improvement. We think about these as polarities that we hold inside of ourselves. They're not an either or. We want both. I want self-acceptance, deep self-acceptance, and deep self-improvement at the same time. And we need both to be healthy in the same way that we need to breathe in and we need to breathe out, right? And we need to be awake and we need to rest. If you do too much of one, it's to your detriment. These are polarities that need to be balanced. Now, again, I like all frameworks. So you all know this about me. I find every framework out there useful. And this is where I feel like, yes, that's why I'm a Libra, because I like everything to be in balance. And my polarities course, the both and boot camp course that I have, dives into how to help your thinking embrace polarities. So if that's something that you are interested in diving into, that's a good course to go find on the website. All right, let's move to Mika. Where's Mika? Are you here? Where's Mika?
I'm
There we
here.
go. Good morning.
How
How
are
are
you guys?
you?
Good morning. I'm pretty good, thanks. How
It's
are
good
you?
to see you. Oh, it's good. You want me to read your question?
Yeah.
Okay, great. All right. So this is Mika's question. When setting boundaries and navigating conflict between friends, how do I unblur the lines between differing values, judgments, fears, and unmet needs? Recently, a small conflict I had with a friend revealed to me a deeper reality that I've had unmet needs and perhaps fears in our relationship. Despite talking on the phone one or more times a week for several years, I often feel tight and rigid with her. I'm struggling to parse out my unmet needs that I haven't advocated for versus judgments that might turn me off. All right, tell me more.
Okay, it's one of those things where I don't, this happened about a week and a half ago. I don't feel like an extreme amount of activation, body activation around it, but it's been on my mind a lot. And I'm very fuzzy around it. So I think there's something like on the outside of my conscious awareness that I haven't like tapped into. There are a bunch of layers. I went back and I watched a lot of your videos. And then so I wrote out the judgments. I jackaled, got pulled out the things that seemed like judgments. I pulled out the needs and all that. I think the biggest thing is this accountability thing. And I've talked to you about that before. When people do things that affect other people, harm, create problems, or whatever with other people, it is super important to me that they own up to
Yep,
it.
absolutely. That they
Yeah.
acknowledge the impact that they're having so that we can all learn and grow and move forward together in a new way.
Exactly. And it seems like she has difficulty with that, especially when she's like triggered. I think that it's more so when she's triggered. I think deep down she really does care about her impact on people, but I think it's creating a fear in me. So that's the part that I'm trying to figure out whether it's fear or judgment. Like, I'm not
Well,
like you're a bad person because you, I just don't know. It feels kind of judgy, but it also feels tight and rigid. I don't know what it is. Help.
Yeah, okay. So let's go concrete. What is the judgment? What is it that you need? Like, speak super unskillfully or just like naturally for a moment. Like, what is it that she's not taking responsibility for that's getting in the way of you trusting her?
Okay, so an example is if she shows up late and there's a consequence for her showing up late, the person gets upset with her or says, "No, never mind, it's too late. I've gone in a different direction." She gets very upset at them.
For being upset with her.
Yeah. And I'm like, "What are you not seeing here?" And I said, "This type of thing has come up several times over the years. It's an issue." And she said, "No, it's not an issue for me." I'm like, "You call me very activated,
So what
but
is the issue for you? Is it
for
lateness, for
me,
example, or is it inconsideration, or
I
is
think
it?
it's, yeah, it's inconsideration. No, okay, if it were just inconsideration, if it were just she did not care, it would be easy for me to be like, yeah, we're not at all going to be friends. Like, this can't work,
That
right?
would be clearer to you.
Yeah. But it's like, I think it's like this, the fact that maybe she, or the possibility that she doesn't see that she has this negative effect and she's putting it on them as if it's their thing.
Okay.
Their issue.
So one of her defenses, it sounds like, is that when somebody else is upset, her defensive system will sometimes say, your being upset is your problem, not mine. Is it some version of that?
No, it's not quite like that. It's more so she'll say, I can't believe I can't believe she kind of like that. And then wanting me to validate her rightness. And I can say, oh yeah, I can understand why you'd be upset that she was mad at you. And I can say stuff like that, but I can't say, yes, you're right to lie about what you were going to do. And then I can't do that. Okay. And she gets upset if I don't validate that kind of way.
Okay. So it's, I don't know. I'm going to keep throwing some things and we'll see how where we get, but it's like she needs her good intentions really validated. And what she's missing is that despite the good intentions, she might still be having a harmful impact and she's unable to really take that part in as much as you would like her to. Is it like this?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, you're so good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So she really over-indexes on her good intentions. And because she had good intentions, it shouldn't have the impact that it actually had.
Yeah. Yep.
So I'd make that piece explicit first.
Okay. So I feel like I can say that to a lot of people and I can say it with softness. I'm not sure that I can say it with softness with her because a part of me is like fearing the defensive,
great,
you know.
Great. Say it to me. Say it to me the way you wish you could say it to her.
There are times I've noticed that you will come to a situation, some kind of agreement contract that you've had with a person, and you have really good intentions, and I know you don't mean to harm anyone, but then something happens where there's some sort of mistake or you weren't able to quite follow through in the way that you intended to. The person gets upset at you, or they fire you or something like that. And then you get mad at them. And what's hard for me is, so that's the part. That's the part I don't want to say. It's hard for me to see you not taking accountability. That feels like such a judgment.
It's such a great judgment. Own it. Own it. There's nothing wrong with a judgment. Listen, this is what we were saying a little earlier, also in the call. Don't worry about having a judgment. Judgments are not inherently bad or wrong. So I wouldn't worry too much about having the judgment, but I'll give you a softer way of saying it. Or maybe, I don't know if it's softer, but let me add a lot of words. This is more words than I would use in real life, but maybe you can pull out the ones that work for you from this, okay? Okay. It sounds like what you're saying is, I'll say it to you. Like, Mika, I've noticed this pattern when you and I talk, okay? Where, you know, remember the situation where such and such happened at work and then you got fired and you were really upset with them for not understanding you. And then you had this situation with so-and-so. And it sounds like in these situations, part of what's really painful for you is that you don't really have a lot of trust that people are understanding your good intentions. Is that true? You know, like it's really important to you that they see you accurately and they understand where you're coming from and what it is that you intended. And sometimes you feel like they make decisions that don't fully acknowledge that. Is that what's happening? Like, I might just start with the piece that she might know. And then I would, let's say, whatever it is, where she'd be like, oh, yeah, that's what happens. Then I'd say, I've had a thought recently and I want to float it by you. Because I wonder if in these situations, you're also feeling super disempowered, like these things are just happening to you unjustly. Is that part of your experience? Yeah. Is it that you just, it's sometimes really bewildering, like why people would have this reaction? Because if they just really knew you or understood you, they might not be doing the things that they're doing. Does it live in you like that? Because sometimes it comes across to me that way when we're talking. Is that true? And then I think if I was getting traction there, then I might say, yeah, because it seems like a piece of these situations that are so painful for you is the level of disempowerment you're feeling in them. I wonder if you're feeling helpless and disempowered and there's nothing you can do about it. Is it like that for you? And then I would move to, I wonder what things that would be 100% in your control that you could be in charge of that would help you feel more in control and more empowered. You know, do you have any ideas of what those might be? Because what I'm very gently trying to do is to get somebody back in touch with their own awareness, their own choicefulness, their own ability to do something about it. And what I would be reacting to in the earlier thing is the victim mentality. But I wouldn't find it useful to go and say, you just have a victim mentality. And if you could just get out of that, then we'd all be happier. How are you feeling? What, am I on the right track or not? What fits or doesn't fit about this so far?
That really, excuse me, helps me understand her more.
Okay.
Yeah. So a couple of things are coming up. One is she has not invited me to dig into her psyche in this way.
Yep.
And so I don't think that it would bring up a lot of shame for her. And okay. So I don't know that she would be willing to, mm-hmm. she might, because we are both into personal development, mm-hmm. but.
Here's an easier way then. Okay. So let's not make it quite so interpersonal, right?
Yeah.
Then I'd be asking questions like, well, in hindsight, what is one thing that you wish you had done differently that would have avoided all of this complexity for you? Can you think of one thing? Knowing what you know now about all of these other shitty people and all of their shitty reactions and all of their shitty blah, 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 knowing what you know now, is there something that in hindsight you wish you had known this that you would have done differently coming into it? Now we're not into the interpersonal thing, but we are getting her attention on learning and growth in a way that isn't blaming, but is inviting her to think about how she can help herself. How's that landing as an idea? Would that work or not?
Yeah, I think that would work. And then, yeah, it might open up the deeper conversation for the stuff that you said previously.
Yeah.
As far as on my end and what comes up in me, so I think that it creates some tension when I'm talking to her. And it makes me, there's a whole bunch of other layers here, but our connection doesn't feel as close as I think it could be, or I would like it to be, or both of us would like to be. I don't share a lot of things about myself because it'll go into her wanting to blame the other person or something like that. And I'm like, that's not where I'm coming from. I'm trying to get into me. I don't give a shit about them. Or she'll interrupt me and it'll be like a lot of super activation. And whenever I try to say my needs, she'll get defensive, go into shame, and then things shut down. So I just kind of keep it very surface, but it's not fulfilling. And the tension, I think, comes out in my voice. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm pretty sure she's picking up on that and she's interpreting it as criticism and judgment.
Yeah. So the high level, I don't know what this sounds like on the ground. I think the high level piece is you getting some language for your on the ground, on the moment experience that you're willing to reveal to her. And it may sound a little bit like, and also being really clear with her about what would help.
Okay.
Right. So it would be something like, I can imagine you saying something like, oh yeah, I love all the ideas that you're throwing out there. I can see you're trying to, whatever it is. I don't have enough details to really come up with something useful here. But yeah, thanks for taking my side on that. Like, I might find what's good in what she's trying to do. It's so nice to have somebody on my side. You know what I'm actually realizing as you do that I would love some help with is trying to figure out the good reason why the other person might have done blah, 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 blah. Have you ever been in that position? Do you know what, if you were to behave like that, what would be going on for you? I'm trying to figure out if I was behaving like that, what would be going on for me? You know, it would be something like knowing what it is that I'm wanting instead and asking for that.
For some reason, it's seeming like I'm needing her to be different in order for me to feel comfortable. I'm needing her to, because if these situations aren't about me, it's like, I want you to look at it this way in order for me to feel relaxed in this. That seems off.
So let's come back to what is happening for you when she's looking at things in a particular way. You're feeling tension, you're feeling anxious, you're feeling tight.
I'm feeling tension, I'm feeling some tightness, some rigid, like, see this
and what
my way.
I see you. You're like a horse ready to run a race and isn't being allowed out of the gate yet.
And there's also a level of, because here's the thing, there are other people who do that in my life and I can hold space a lot more for them. Uh-huh. It doesn't bring up the same kind of tension. There's also there's anger that she has, like a bitter anger, something that I think that's where the fear comes.
You're afraid of her anger? You're afraid of her turning on you?
Yeah, I don't feel like, I don't, Yeah, you know the whole their anger is welcome here. That's not me. I'm still
Okay, so
working on that.
That's not something off. Let's first depathologize that. You are getting wisdom in that moment about what you are and are not available for. And you are getting cues in that moment about what you do and don't enjoy participating in. That's not something off about you. That's actually wisdom for you in the moment about what you're available for, about what you have the capacity and the willingness in that moment to handle. I think what else is happening for you, though, is maybe, and tell me if I'm wrong about this, you also have a vision of your highest potential of being able to field this kind of stuff with so much grace and groundedness and compassion. And maybe part of what's happening for you this moment is you're getting a bit of a, hey, you've grown this far, but with these people, you can't do it yet. And as you notice that, maybe what you're feeling is a little bit of frustration with yourself because you wish you were there already. Is it something like that?
Yeah, there's a lot of that.
Okay. So then I would say, let's be really gentle with yourself and let yourself be where you are. Knowing that you are a learning, growing, evolving being, and you have a vision for what you're reaching for. And in this moment with this person, what she is bringing is just a little bit above your current capacity. And the conversation you and I are having is getting clearer to me now. You're trying to figure out what is the capacity that I don't have yet that I'm trying to develop in relationship to somebody like her. Is this right? And so when I put it that way, what do you think it is?
What my capacity is, you say? What?
What is the thing you would need to develop in order to show up in this relational frame differently?
Yeah, I don't know. And I can feel a wall coming up in my head right now. Like, don't go there.
Okay, so let's honor that. Let's honor that. Let's notice that wall. Let's notice the don't go there. Let's notice your system tightening up. And these are all cues for you about your safety. And they are worth honoring. They are worth honoring. It's a little bit like, 300 years ago when a house was burning down, people would stand on the outside wishing that they could run in and grab the people inside the house and pull them to safety. But if they did that, it doesn't matter how much you wish you had that capacity. If they did that, they were going to get burned. They were going to die themselves. But that vision, that wouldn't it be great if we humans could run into a burning house and rescue people, led to the development of all kinds of flame-resistant materials and the study of fire. And now we have firefighting teams that can literally run into burning buildings and get people out of there. But they had to develop the right gear. And I would use that metaphor in this situation. You have this person, and your current system is like, nope, big wall. Don't do that. We're going to inhibit you. We're going to hold you back because it's not safe yet. But you're also having a vision of, ooh, what would I need to be able to do to know in my inner being that I have a different reaction and I could actually field somebody like this differently? And then I would slow it down and let your inner being start giving you that wisdom. But don't force yourself to do something because you wish you could. Does that make sense? Is that disappointing? Is that a little deflating? You're like, no, just give me a quick insight right now, and then I can go implement it.
That's what's going on, and I'm trying to figure out. I'm thinking of like how I will say that to her, and it's like I feel like a bad friend because when she's coming to me for support in those times, I need at this point to set a boundary around that because I cannot handle that. And yeah, so
Then
I
own
feel
it as a limitation. Own it as a limitation. I feel like a bad friend. Listen, there's this inner conflict that happens in me. Sometimes you come to me, blah, 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 and I notice all this tension in me, and I'm trying to figure out what that is about, but I don't feel like I can be fully present because it's triggering some stuff in me that I want to figure out. And I just want to name it because I don't want it to come across there's anything you're doing wrong. I'm not sure what's happening for me. I just know that I'm currently not able to field it in a way that I wish I could. Some version of that might be really neutralizing. And then you're bringing the self-ownership that you're wishing she brought more of. You're modeling it.
Okay.
Oh, I want to talk so much more about this, but we're getting to the end of the call.
I think there's a lot of stuff here, so there are more layers. I will be back.
Great, great. I want updates. I want updates from everybody. Yes. Thank you so much, Mika. I love the
Thank
question. Yeah,
you.
rich conversation. You guys, those were three really great questions today. I enjoyed those conversations so much. Thank you for being here. Just a friendly reminder, if this episode resonated with you, please share with your family, friends, and coworkers. And if these conversations leave you wanting more, please consider joining my monthly membership program where you can join me live to keep growing with a community of open-hearted, like-minded people just like you. There are more free resources, including a quiz to help you assess your preferred listening style at yvetteerasmus.com and a lot of free videos on my YouTube channel. Remember, personal growth is a journey and not a destination, so please keep loving up all your awkward, messy, and imperfect parts as you go. See you next time.